Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sunup. The Daily Sunup podcast is a conversation with the Colorado Sun. See our trust indicators at coloradosun.com/ethics. It's Thursday, April 18th. Today, reporter Michael Booth talks with fellow Sun reporter John Engold about the latest in health and climate news. Before we begin, get ready. By 2034, older adults will outnumber children globally. Colorado-based Next 50 creates economic opportunities for older adults through grants and social investments. Next 50 works to combat age bias, ensure digital equity, and empower older adults to age on their terms. Explore our initiatives and grant opportunities at next50foundation.org. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. During the Great Depression, Colorado's governor, Big Ed Johnson, declared martial law along the state's southern border to prioritize jobs for local workers. He targeted out-of-state citizens and Mexican migrants who were seasonal laborers in industries like sugar beet farming. Johnson deployed the Colorado National Guard to prevent these workers from entering the state by blocking highways and railroads from New Mexico. The measure faced significant opposition and proved largely ineffective when agricultural operations employed blockade runners to bring workers through. When only 10% of local unemployed people took the jobs Johnson hoped to preserve for them, he elected to remove martial law. Before we continue, we're excited to introduce Pine Melon, Denver and Boulder's community grocery app. Get fresh, locally sourced foods delivered to your door at fair prices. Enjoy the convenience of farm-to-table groceries at home. Their free same-day delivery saves you time while supporting local producers. Use promo code ColoradoSun for $50 off your first order. Now our feature story.
Thanks for joining us today, everybody, on our Thursday podcast, where we talk about items and news reporting that we've done for the Temperature Newsletter. And always with me is my health reporting partner, John Engold. Hello, John. And he's going to be talking about some prescription drug board and prescription drug bill issues. We encourage you, as part of your following of the Colorado Sun, to join us here every week and join us for our daily podcast and to continue to follow our legislative coverage as the legislature goes into its final weeks. Always a lot of hugely important issues that they leave until the last minute, from the budget to affordable housing to gun rights and gun limitations and any number of other things. So keep following our legislative crew for that. How are you doing today, John?
I'm good, Mike. How are you?
Doing well. Looking forward to, as we mentioned in the Temperature Newsletter, to the Nuggets joining the playoffs again on Saturday night against our easily defeated foe, the Los Angeles Lakers. So tuning into that. I hope I didn't just jinx it on Saturday. And it'll be fun to follow that for the next few weeks. I hope our run lasts that long. You've been reporting about the prescription drug board again and also some possible adjustments to it that they are at least talking about at the beginning of legislature, on changing how it functions or what its responsibilities are. You updated us in the temperature this week. What is the latest?
Yeah, so this board, just as a quick refresher, this board looks at prescription drugs, really expensive prescription drugs, and then decides whether those prices that people have to pay for them makes these drugs unaffordable. And then if these drugs are unaffordable, the board can move forward with actually setting something called an upper payment limit, which is actually a price cap. They can limit how much a drug maker or a drug seller can get for the drug in Colorado. And this is something that other states are looking to do. These boards, prescription drug affordability boards, they're known as PDABs. There's a number of states now that have PDABs, and none have yet set an upper payment limit. And Colorado is currently heading towards doing that on one drug. It's called Enbrel, and that would be the first time in the country that we've ever seen that happen. So it's kind of a cutting edge health policy sort of thing that's happening here in the state. But as with anything in healthcare policy, and especially anything when you're talking about pharmaceuticals, enormously complicated.
And there's this counterintuitive thing that you've been explaining to people, which is that you would think that patients and families of patients who rely on these hugely expensive drugs would be all in favor of this at first glance, But then you realize, as with most things, healthcare, as you mentioned, it gets more complicated than that.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, patient groups are usually, you know, patient communities are usually not one homogenous group. They involve people with different perspectives and different opinions on how things should work. But there has been some pretty strong pushback from patient advocates, from rare disease advocates, against what the PDAB in Colorado is doing. The concern here being that the PDAB is devoted to looking at the most expensive drugs. We're talking drugs, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in terms of their costs. And so what these drugs often end up being is drugs that treat rare diseases. And so there's concerns from patients in the rare disease community that if the state sets a price cap on it, that either the pharmaceutical manufacturer will pull the drug from being available in Colorado, or that throughout sort of the economic chain, it won't make sense for people to end up selling the drug. So it'll effectively become unavailable. So they are worried that they're going to lose access to their drugs. And they also have this counter argument, which is that the drugs aren't necessarily unaffordable to them, because when you have drugs that cost this much money, the pharmaceutical companies often have patient assistance programs, which help patients pay their own out-of-pocket costs. So the real like enormous chunk that these drugs cost ends up getting paid by insurance companies. Now, this ended up getting pulled into a piece of legislation that was at the Capitol this year and just recently ended up not succeeding.
So what was the bill going to change about the way Colorado system has been working?
So the bill was really in response to the concerns by folks in the cystic fibrosis community. This drug called Trikafta, which has been this absolute game-changing breakthrough drug for the treatment of cystic fibrosis, but also costs a ton of money, was the first drug that the PDAB here in Colorado looked at for setting an upper payment limit. Ultimately, they decided that it wasn't unaffordable because of these patient assistance programs. But in the meantime, it caused a lot of stress for people in the cystic fibrosis community, people who were worried that if this drug became unavailable in Colorado, maybe they would have to move to another state. They were worried that Colorado's action may have sort of a national ripple effect. And if that happened, they may have to move to another country, because this drug is actually, it's life-giving to people with cystic fibrosis. It allows people with cystic fibrosis to potentially have near normal lifespans for the first time in human history. So this caused a lot of concern. They went to lawmakers. They asked for a bill that would have prohibited the PDAB here in Colorado from looking at drugs that have a rare disease designation or orphan drug designation. But this ends up not being as simple as it seems, because while a drug like Trikafta has that orphan drug designation, and that's the only designation it has, there's actually a lot of drugs, including really high-cost drugs, that will have an orphan drug designation for some things, but their main use is for a common disease condition that it doesn't have that designation for. And the way the bill was written is that it would have pulled those drugs in as well, so those drugs wouldn't have been available for the PDAB to review. And it would have knocked out two-thirds of the drugs that the PDAB potentially could have looked at. So it got through its first committee hearing, not without some controversy, ended up getting stuck on the Senate floor for months, just kind of sitting there. And then earlier this week, the Senate decided to postpone the bill until basically after the session had ended. So that's kind of a procedural move to kill the bill. It could potentially come back if somehow the votes were found for it. But at this point, it appears that bill is dead.
So the PDAB will continue in Colorado. Is it fair, do you think, to say, without trying to get you to speculate too much, but I'm wondering if the PDABs around the country have at least put the drug makers on notice that state lawmakers and state medical boards are watching, and that they're going to get involved more often, and that completely unjustified or unexplained drug prices won't necessarily be automatically tolerated, automatically paid every time?
Well, maybe. So Colorado is also another first in the country, is facing litigation over its PDAB right now and its decision to move forward and trying to set at least consider setting an upper payment limit on Enbrel. So It's unclear whether that legislation will even find that this kind of PDAB work, this upper payment limit setting work, is even something states can do on their own. In the meantime, you are seeing some national efforts around exempting orphan drugs, rare disease drugs from PDAP consideration. So this is not just a Colorado thing. So I think there's really a lot of, there's an open question about what PDABs are really going to be able to accomplish. And then an argument that you will sometimes hear patients make is, okay, well, if you end up lowering the price of this drug, who does this benefit? Does it benefit me? No, because my out-of-pocket costs are still fixed based on my insurance. It ends up benefiting your insurer. So, you know, PDABs kind of have this goal of potentially saving money for individuals who use these drugs. They also have the goal of saving money for the system overall. It turns out doing both of those things at the same time is really, really difficult just because of the way that the healthcare system fits together. Now, since we're talking about things that are really, really difficult and maybe at first glance don't seem like they should be so difficult, Mike, let's turn to you and some reporting that you've been doing on how to measure mountains. So a sneakily very controversial project has been going on to reassess the elevation of some of Colorado's highest peaks and figure out if they actually are what they claim to be. And we have some results from that. So what have we found?
You think we would have settled this by now. I mean, it's been a while. There's obviously been all kinds of complicated measuring systems before, from GPS to gravity systems and everything else. But NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which has a big office in Boulder and has some of the great science that comes out of Boulder that we try to talk about whenever we can, has been in this middle of this years-long effort to recalibrate where sea level actually is all around the globe. And you would think that would have been settled a long time ago. But what they've learned is they study everything from plate tectonics to taking gravity measurements way up high in airplanes, is that where sea level is under any given spot of the Earth's crust can change. It can undulate depending on where you are on the sphere and the weight of the plates that are above it and near it and the gravitational pull of those big objects. And so, yes, they are now finally ready to come out with the results this morning. And we are talking about them because everybody, of course, wants to know how high that 14er was that they just climbed or that they are planning to climb next month. And is it still a 14er? There's always been some worry that Sunshine Peak down near Lake City, part of the gorgeous San Juans and a bunch of 14ers around that beautiful city, was next to go off the list to get relegated, as they say in British soccer, down to the next division of 13ers because it was just barely over 14,000. But the news this morning is that everybody's safe in Colorado. All those 14ers, whether you say there's 53 or 58, depending on how they measure those, are still above 14,000 feet. And Sunshine, in fact, has moved up one spot on the list and is swapping places with Huron. Huron still staying above 14,000, but losing a couple of feet, as did many of the 14ers in Colorado under this new measuring system. And I guess the real takeaway from it that I put in later in the story as I realized what the big significance of it is, that instead of being within a couple of feet under the old measurements, when by the time you get to the top of 14er, thinking, a couple of feet, good enough, depending on the day, depending on the measuring system, depending on changes in the Earth's atmosphere and crust, we're now down to like within an inch and just a couple of centimeters. So it's an amazingly precise system. And kudos to the folks at NOAA who have been working on this for years and creating these measuring implications for all kinds of different industries.
So this is one of those only in Colorado kinds of stories, because on the one hand, you know, what does it matter? Our mountains are not actually getting shorter. They're not shrinking in any sort of meaningful way. Rocks aren't falling off the top that are making them shorter. So the amount you hike is still the amount you hike no matter what. But there has to be a lot of relief out there that Colorado's 14ers all stayed 14ers, right?
Yeah. And if you think about, you know, that we're all, not all of us, but many of us are obsessed with lists and with checking things off the list, whether it's birds or peaks or spots on Instagram's top 10 lists. And so it does have implications for everything from the elevation signs that sit outside of most Colorado towns. They might have to go up or down a couple of feet by the time towns get around to changing those. People down at the bottom of that 14 years list were worried that they might lose it. Pikes, obviously an iconic peak, had a 100 feet plus to go with in terms of a margin of error. So they're fine. But there are some implications for some fun spots, like that marker that everybody loves to take their picture on the Capitol steps that says this spot is a mile high above sea level. That's actually going to have to go up two steps in 2026 when they have the official ceremony. Because of the way they did the measurements, they found out that the old marker is not exactly in the right spot. So you might have to head back to Denver to get your picture taken on the steps again when it's in the new place.
It's funny, you think of all the marketing materials that must be out there with the specific elevations or the specific towns or mountains and how high they are that are now going to be out of date.
Unknown, have not heard whether the stadium stripes with the seat levels that are at a mile high are going to have to change to your different seat level. So season ticket holders, stay tuned on that. The problem is this time of year, those seats might be empty if you're at Coors Field as the Rockies continue their losing streaks. But there are just a lot of other implications for commerce and any number of other industries. If you're in a floodplain, they will now have much more precise measurements of exactly what's going to be in the floodplain as sea levels rise. The shipping ports and river estuaries that need to know exactly how much clearance they've got with the ship, they want to know these new numbers. So all kinds of lists getting torn up and rewritten all around the globe.
Well, I'm excited to read your story. It's going to be interesting debate.
Yeah, it's a fun thing. And we continue to follow NOAA and appreciate all the work that they do to keep us all precise and safe around the country.
All right. Well, Mike, thanks for keeping us up to date. And readers, listeners, thank you for tuning in for another podcast. And thank you for supporting The Sun. Mike and I, we are here every week on Thursdays. And we're in your inbox every Wednesdays with the temperature newsletter if you want to subscribe to that. And hope you all have a good week. And we'll see you back here next week.
You can read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. One of Colorado's top Republican lawmakers says he's not sure why the state party subpoenaed him in its lawsuit to block unaffiliated voters from the primaries. Former House Minority Leader Mike Lynch of Wellington told The Sun he will comply with whatever he must legally, but said he's not sure what the Colorado GOP is trying to prove. Lynch said it is a continuation of an active ploy to destroy the state party by attacking fellow Republicans. The subpoena is the latest example of how fractured the party is becoming under Chairman Dave Williams as election season amps up. The sale of water rights for a small power plant in Glenwood Canyon could have big implications for a number of water users who pull from the Colorado River. A group of Western Slope agencies led by the Colorado River Water Conservation District wants to buy the rights for $99 million. The century-old Shoshone Power Plant has senior water rights, and the district wants to use them to try to help the river. Sun Water reporter Shannon Mullane has a deep dive into what the move would mean for millions of Colorado residents on either side of the Continental Divide. The unanimous approval of a first-of-its-kind bill in the U.S. House marks a big moment for the nation's surging outdoor recreation industry. The Expanding Public Lands Outdoor Recreation Experience Act, or EXPLORE Act, would streamline the permitting process for outfitters and direct land managers to identify and develop long-distance bike trails. It would also offer grants for urban areas to expand parks and protect rock climbing in wilderness areas. Passage of the package supporting the nation's $1.1 trillion outdoor recreation economy bodes well for the Act's companion bill, the America's Outdoor Recreation Act, which awaits action in the Senate. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again next time. Now, a quick message from our team.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening. My name is Jason Blevins. I'm the outdoors writer here at the Colorado Sun, co-founder of the Colorado Sun. I'm on the weekly podcast with David Krause every Monday. And I also write a weekly newsletter. Comes out every Thursday. It's called The Outsider. Take a look at each issue has sort of early glimpses of stories. I got stuff on housing, high country business, high country culture, public lands, public land managers, kind of just about anything kind of interesting and happening on the Western Slope. Try to get into it. Ski industry stuff. I invite you to come check it out. It's one of the many newsletters we have at the Colorado Sun. Head to coloradosun.com/join and become a member and support the Colorado Sun. Appreciate you guys listening. Thanks.